This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Jason D'Aquino. Jason, great talking to you.
Hey, you too, man.
Jason, you are an artist. I think a great way to start things off is you were recently featured in the Miami Times about your Kickstarter, about raising funds for the arts. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that project is Portel del Pop. It's an experimental art space that Katie and I are creating with the help of the one and only Iggy Pop.
And is this the first of its kind, or have there been Kickstarters like this? I know there are a lot of artists' co-ops, but is this the first one to be done via raising funds from a Kickstarter?
I doubt it. There's every project in the world out there that's been done. We saw so many examples of spaces, but none of them were what we are creating, because I didn't see anything that was quite like what the Grays have done.
How did you get Iggy Pop involved? Were you a longtime friend of his, or did you get his attention for the project?
He's a friend. Katie organized the project with him, or I should say got him involved in it. But he's a brilliant soul, and it's difficult for me. I guess I'm not a very social person, like this whole new media thing, you know, even doing a podcast on, if you want to speak with an artist, I don't know what that really means, but, you know, I did one version of one of these podcast things a little while ago, which is, by the way, Robert, why I was so apprehensive in speaking with you, because my last experience was a bit of a rope-a-dope, you know. And the Iggy Pop thing, as far as like the way that people have responded to Iggy, I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, lived a life that other people could only dream up, you know, and he wants to explore a different artistic medium. And I get people who are saying everything from shilling to like trying to, you know, I don't know, profit as anything other than a spiritual component, you know, that Iggy is Iggy. You know, and he's exploring another medium. So I don't understand why anyone wouldn't support that and learn from a guy like that. You know, like come and meet him, learn from him. I guess opportunity is a rare thing these days. And when people get a whiff of it, they think it's a trick.
Is this largely locally based in Miami, or have you been getting support and attention nationwide?
We're getting support, you know, from artists, but as far as like support and attention in terms of funding and stuff like that wasn't the initial concern of our project. Wasn't about trying to get all of the funding necessarily. It was about trying to gauge people's temperature on a project like that.
So with Portel del Pop, it will charge no rent and take no commissions on the sale.
What we're going to be doing with the space is having a 0% commission on the sale and a zero rent on the sale, just like we said in the description online. And it's the idea is that we're offering to punch a hole in the fabric of the art community, in that it's allowing artists who would otherwise not have access to a scene in a space like this. Like Miami Art Basel is a mecca for artists. They consider when they've shown in that locale and in those international fairs that they've achieved some level of success, and we want to offer it to artists based on merit.
Is this open to all artists, or there's some kind of a specific qualifications? I've joined artist associations in the past, and you have to pass this process of submitting your work to judges. Would it be similar to that?
It's open to all artists. Yeah, but it's you're going to have to write a one-page submission to explain who you are and what you want to achieve. You know, why you would need salvation. And it's not a pay-for-play. It's none of those things.
I was reading in the Miami Times article, for a certain amount of pledge, you'll actually do a personalized tattoo on their skin.
That is correct. There were several tiers of rewards in the project, and one of them did involve tattooing. Two of them, actually.
Were you a tattoo artist first, or did you get started with the miniatures and then move from there to tattoo art?
Right out of high school, I was offered an apprenticeship, and my family believed in the value of education, so I did go to college. And as much as I gained from that experience, I still wonder what would have happened to me in my development had I just accepted the apprenticeship tattooing. And I probably would have burned out a long time ago. Like, those guys were pagan bikers. And, you know, it was a direction that the artistic side of me wanted to take advantage of. And the part of me that, you know, is a little rebellious, but the intelligence side kind of kicked in and said, you really need to do something a little less fraught with danger.
How did you start with the miniatures? They're on matchboxes.
I had a friend that I was living with who was a sculptor, and he got a job for a high-end jeweler cutting seats in platinum rings for diamonds, and it basically was like sculpture but very small, you know, very meticulous work, and the tools that he would use were very small and finely, precisely tuned. And he had some magnifying goggles that he worked with, and he took them home one day, and I put them on and started drawing, just as initially as a test of my own steadiness, the ability to render. What scale could I take it to? And I was doing portraiture about the size of a postage stamp, a little bit smaller. I sold one of those pieces to Peter Schiff, actually. It was one of the first encounters I had with him. I was in Big Indy in New York. So basically, I tried on his glasses and I started working small. I fell upon the canvas size of the matchbook because I didn't want to render at a scale that wouldn't withstand scrutiny if it was blown up to, say, a poster size, which some of the original images were based on, you know. Some of them were based on pulp novels, you know, all kinds of weird stuff. But the idea was to render the entire image on the inside cover of a matchbook so that when anyone saw that piece, whether it was in a magazine or, you know, on a computer screen or what have you, that there's a built-in scale reference. So you know what you're looking at is, you know, not only this fully rendered image, but it's also at this scale. It to be extremely difficult to do either. It just was very meditative.
You did a series called Shilling for Ames, and you did the whole Twin Peaks theme, but you also did references to the Ames chair. One of them is Ames chair with the Twin Peaks owl on it. How did you connect those two topics, the furniture of Ames with the show Twin Peaks?
David Lynch has got a love for the 20th century modern furniture designers. So the exploration of those pieces was just as much about David Lynch as it was about, say, Twin Peaks or any other one of his films.
Yeah, what I really do like about Twin Peaks, about David Lynch, is that he's a filmmaker, but he also comes from it as a direction, as a visual artist as well, and he puts that passion into his work. I think a lot of film is lacking in that.
Oh, absolutely. That's the same reason that I love Crispin Glover's work. You know, here you've got a filmmaker who is creating things that no theater is ever going to show, you know, and yet it's a passion for him, so he's taking Hollywood money, you know, to make these anti-Hollywood projects. And it's all about showing people that, you know, you don't have to be fed on a steady diet of, like, Friends, you know, as far as sitcoms. And, you know, it doesn't have to wrap up in a half an hour neatly in a bow. Like, there's something about leaving the theater in discomfort and having to actually discuss what you just saw. You know, it's called learning.
What is your favorite thing about the series Twin Peaks? I mean, there's been a lot of talk of that lately because of the new show.
My favorite thing about the series?
Either the plot or the characters or the aesthetics. Is there a cinematography?
I like the imagery of the lodge. I like the magical aspects of it. You know, I'm kind of irritated with the way that they handled the reverse audio in the new series.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just being silly. But whenever you take something and you realize that you have to dumb it down for mass consumption, it loses a little something. You know, so there's a little integrity lost in the translation. Plus, I don't always want to see the actors, you know, elderly, still doing the same job or, you know, hanging out. It's like it starts to feel like some sick spinoff of like Dukes of Hazzard, you know, like Cooter's Garage or like, you know, Daisy's Place. You know, those kind of shows usually don't really work.
Oh, yeah. Like how the original actors the original actors have a pretty, other than Kyle MacLachlan, of course, most of them have a fairly minor role. They're just there kind of on the side.
I don't know. I mean, to me, if you have to experience a character for more than a few minutes in what's, you know, a finite program, then they've taken a stage. I feel like they could have done something. I was thinking it like an earlier, like a preview, like what do they call it? A prequel would have been more interesting to employ good actors to play the youthful versions of those characters, you know, but something about seeing them later. You know, it's like seeing Harrison Ford, like, come back as Indiana Jones, and, like, he's old, you know. Those characters have to change, you know, as their physical selves do, too. Evolve.
You also did Matchbox of Hellraiser. We had the actor Nicholas Vince on the show. Are you a fan of horror?
Let me answer that question by saying, Nicholas Vince?
The actor who plays Chatterer.
It was a Pinhead Matchbook that I did, I believe. And that's Doug Bradley. Nick Vince was, I don't think I ever did one of Nick Vince.
You were also influenced by H.P. Lovecraft?
Yes. Yes, H.P. Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft, H.C. Lovecraft, all of them.
What is your favorite of his works, especially his artwork?
Of Lovecraft? Lovecraft's artwork, you say? I'm not really particularly interested in Lovecraft's artwork, to be honest. Like, I want to hear his voice, you know? I feel like I've read every story that he's written so many times that I know where they are in the book. You know, like listening to an album that you really love and you just have it playing. You know, some of his stuff is archetypal. It's so many, being a fan of horror, so many conventions came from his writing. People don't even realize how much of it was from there. But you're sending me off on a Lovecraft spin here, man.
Well, his work, his drawings are very detailed. The black and white ink drawings. They do kind of remind me of some of your work.
Again, I can't speak to that, I guess.
You also have done a series on serial killers. Which serial killers have you covered?
Which serial killers have I covered? I think John Gacy, Charles Manson. Who else? I did one of Keenan Ramirez. I did a handful, man. I was doing series at that time. I did some dictators. I did some NASA, like Apollo mission stuff. Those were like series commissions mostly by larger clients, you know, people who want more than one at the same time.
And you do these kind of industrial drawings of... There, you have old cameras, old typewriters, pistols, clocks that are very detailed.
I mean, that's more or less, I have a love for small machines and small objects, you know, treasure objects like that. And the clock works, the inner workings, it's an opportunity to render something that's got intricate detail.
About how long does it take you to work on one of those projects on a Matchbox?
What I usually do when I'm working on a matchbook is I'm going to set up either three or four of them at the same time, and I'm going to rotate them on a drawing board so that I'm not going to be spending so much time on one in one clip that I lose sight and actually destroy it. When you're working that small, you know, a lot of times, especially with the added concern of an antique surface, you got to tread lightly. You know, I can take an eraser and I can sharpen it with a razor blade and take out some of the graphite if I'm lucky. But I could also destroy the whole thing or, you know, slash and burn a whole area of detail that I just spent an hour on, you know, with one stroke. So it's, you know, four up on a board, kill them at the end of the week probably, you know. And these are things that if I work on them, like I said, continuously, that there's a good chance I'm going to overwork them or I'm going to just destroy them.
These are mostly, you're saying these are antique matchboxes that you work on. Where do you get them mostly from, antique stores or online, and are they difficult or expensive to get?
They're vintage matchbooks, and for the most part, you can get them for nothing, you know. And with me, the trick of it is that whether I find them at a yard sale or in a junk shop or, you know, in a dumpster somewhere, you know, it doesn't matter. The provenance of the object is what makes it interesting, the life that it had or may have had, you know, the advertising that's on it, like, where is it from? You know, what was the scenario under which this thing changed hands, you know? And yes, I like the color because if it has a little patina on it, which comes hand in hand with age, you know, not only does it have a built-in history, but it's got a built-in middle ground. So you can pull highlights and you can drop in your darks. You're not just working on a stark white sterile square.
How old generally are the match boxes? You said like the 50s, or some of them are even older?
I wouldn't say that many of them are older than that. The paper, I would imagine, goes through so many different permutations over time that I can't even imagine. Pulps, man. Pulp paper tends to break up and rot, you know. So I don't have any matchbooks that are much older than that.
Are you interested in architecture? And you did mention the Eames chairs and interior design. How interested in architecture are you, and what are some genres of architecture that especially interest you?
Well, I have a mild interest in architecture. I spent a lot of time up in Buffalo, New York, and there's a bunch of Frank Lloyd Wrights up there. So I've been in a couple of them and, you know, checked them out. And Graycliff, for example, you know, and the state that they're in, and, you know, the public conversation about restoration and preservation. And the thing that I like about architecture is that there's actually rules, you know, or governing motivations. You're trying to marry form and function. You're trying to make something that not only makes a beautiful statement, but also actually form, you know, survives as a house. It has to, you gotta be able to go in there and stay warm and stuff. And so the Frank Lloyd Wrights, you know, beautiful display of horizontals, and it's an amazing aesthetic, and they're incredible, you know. But you're going to build a house in Buffalo that gets 4 feet of snow, you better put a little pitch on the roof, you know. That's what I got to say about that.
We are getting close to the end of the show. Before I wrap things up, would you like to plug your Kickstarter and give our audience the information if they want to chip in? And there's also a hashtag, a support living artist.
Yeah, I would say anyone who's interested in seeing what this project is about is go to porteldelpop.com. Check it out. And there's going to be updates and more information happening there as we get closer to our dates positive here. We have February 24th nailed down for an maiden voyage opening reception exhibition. And that's the one that Iggy Pop's personally going to be involved in. You know, as of October, we're going to have other events that are taking place, and it's going to be a surprise, put it that way.
So this is something that you just got started?
This is a space that's currently being built with my two little hands and my lovely wife's two little hands.
Does you saying 30,000 is the maximum needed to basically get things started, but you've already pretty much got it up, the ball rolling?
Well, it goes like this. We're constructing a space that basically is the labor of love, and it's going to be coming out of our own pockets, and the time comes off of our own days. You know, we're artists, and we are committed to what we're doing as call it what you want to. It's a legacy.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Jason D'Aquino for being on. It's been an excellent show.
Hey, you're welcome.